I once, I don't know how true this stat is, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway. One of my buddies said that new parents, you don't have a good night's sleep for approximately 6 to 7 years.
God, I hope that's not true.
I just started crying again.
Yeah. And with that. While Danny and I recover from the tears of that last statement, we'll go ahead and launch right into introducing Dr. Ed Hansen. Thank you very much for joining us again.
Hey, thanks for having me back in color this time.
Yeah, I know. This is wild. I didn't know your color palette, so thank you for sharing that with us.
Yes, because he's in a room that he's...
like it is in gray and white. That's good. Black and white. Yeah.
So many colorful things in the background that he's chosen with us today.
I think you forgot how to introduce our podcast.
Did I?
Yeah, you forgot to say, welcome movie lovers.
To In Love With Movies.
I'm Danny.
And I'm Nick.
And this is our podcast.
That's right. And what do we do here?
Talk about movies. And what else?
Love.
Okay. And then you say the guest. He just got too excited, Ed, that you're back.
I did. I'm so excited to talk to Ed because we've had him on before and he shared his love of the movie Young Frankenstein, which listeners, if you go back and listen to that, you will be reminded of his love of that movie, but also the fact that we got talking about my love of Spaceballs as sort of my entry that I remember very, very vividly for Mel Brooks movies and why I have personal attachments to it. And so Ed was kind enough to be willing to come back on and be our sort of, I don't know if expert's the right word, but he does seem to have always done a lot more research in the movies than me.
Resident Mel Brooks enthusiast.
There you go. There you go.
You don't have to be expert, but I would be surprised if you found someone who knows more, but
wow, I can't wait for all the factoids that'll be thrown out about.
I got a couple of factoids. Not as many. I got a couple.
Cool.
I'm looking forward to that. But before we get there, we figured we would have another chat about love and relationships. And since Ed has already been on and talked to us a little bit about sort of his wife and the fact that they've got some kids and how they met each other and their love story, we thought we'd get a little deeper with some questions related to why we watched this movie. Movie lovers, we were just talking before we started recording that Danielle didn't realize that it wasn't Ed who picked this movie, but me, which leads right into the fact that this first half of the love conversation, before we get talking about Spaceballs specifically, we're going to talk about the things we do for love. For longtime listeners, you know that my wife, this whole podcast is something that she's done for love.
Check.
You know that she has embraced her fandom of Star Wars, including cosplaying and other things like that for love.
Yep, got it tatted on me and everything. In fact, our baby shower theme was Baby Yoda.
Oh.
And our child's name will be Grogu.
Yep, that's the announcement right there. That our child, that is the name that we are naming our child. And we didn't want it to be Grogu exactly,
we went with... the more Americanized version.
Yeah, the more Americanized Grogu.
I don't know, maybe it's a working title.
Blue Harvest becomes Star Wars.
I did not understand that.
Ed, do you know that one?
No working title. I mean, Blue Harvest, isn't that a Family Guy reference?
It is, but do you know why Family Guy references it?
Tell me.
Okay. So that is actually what the working title was for Star Wars.
Why?
Okay, so I inferred it, but I did not know it.
Interesting.
Yep. Okay. But anyway, that's enough about us. And we've heard a lot about the things that Danny's done for love for me. Maybe I'll share some more about things that I have done as well. But first, Ed, what are some things that you have done for love in your relationship with your wife?
Yeah, I mean... gosh, good relationships really are about just meeting the other person where they need you to be, right? So it's whether it's a hard thing, a big thing, a small thing, sometimes you need to be there. Sometimes you need to do the thing that is new to you and all these other things. I think that in part, I had a much smaller family growing up. And so she came from a much larger family. So like when I met her extended family at Thanksgiving, I met literally everybody. We had been together for about 8 months, and we, gosh, I think I met, her dad has three siblings, so I met all the aunts and uncles, all the cousins, grandbabies, all these different kinds of things. And there was one of her uncles in particular, she had warned me about this, I'm glad, because they live on the Bay of Tampa Bay at a little inlet down in Florida. And she said, don't fall for the Bayman Challenge. I said, what's the Bayman Challenge? And she says, there's a curse that when significant others get introduced to the family, they get them to jump into the bay. And I said, if you hadn't warned me, I probably would. I won't, because the ones that stick around don't do it. And so, like, her cousin, her cousins that married people and brought them home, they didn't jump into the bay. And so I threw this back in her uncle's face, and I said, well, Blaine didn't do it. Mike didn't do it. I don't have to do it. He says, you want to be picking up my dog's poop like Blaine? Is that what the future that you want? He's a real character, Al. He's like a character from a movie for sure. But honestly, I've always been an extroverted person. So I kind of thrive meeting a lot of people. And that's not a big sacrifice. But I mean, that comes to mind. Movie-wise, I've watched more of her favorite genre than my favorite genre. She loves rom-coms. I like good rom-coms. And some of the ones that she has had me watch have been a delightful surprise. Name we just them. Watched over the holiday break. We watched The Holiday with
Jack Black,
Jude Law,
Judd, and
Kate Winslet.
Yes, and Kate Winslet. And that's, I like that movie way more than I thought I was going to. Actually, Kate Winslet's neighbor when she's living in Cameron Diaz's house reminds me a lot of Mel Brooks, so that actually made me like the movie a lot.
Oh, the old guy.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I was like, they were thinking about Mel Brooks when they did this, or Norman Lear, or someone like that. Yeah. But no, it was a delightful movie. And so, you know, sometimes she gets me out of my comfort zone. Sometimes I get her out of her comfort zone. Nothing big, though. I mean, I think that we know each other's limits pretty darn well.
How long would you say, in your opinion, from what you remember, approximating, how long did it take you to sort of learn each other's limits, do you think?
Ooh, until after we were married. Me.
How long did you date before you were married?
Not a super long time. Let's see. We had our first date only a few months after I moved to Florida in December, but then there was like a little hiatus. And so then a little more than about a year we dated before we were engaged, and then about another year plus after that. Yeah, so I think that we had been dating for about 16-ish months before we got engaged, and then, or maybe 14, and then we were married 13 months after that. So about 2 years before getting married, which is not in the grand scheme of things so long. And so, yeah, I would say just continuing to see, and I talked about it last time, how our families were coming together into like this new unit,
yeah,
and just understanding the comfort zone. And now we're in a place where everybody feels comfortable with everybody. And I don't think it was always that way, but a lot of good communication to get there.
Yeah, I would say, Nick tells everyone this, but like when we were very early on in our relationship, I think I was way more willing to do things to make sure you stayed in love with me because I thought that you would, I don't know. I had never had a secure relationship. Nick was the first time. So
it's worth mentioning that she, like, to this day, 10 years later, still has occasional nightmares of anxiety dreams where she imagines me leaving her.
But at least I don't say it out loud. It's just in my subconscious.
True.
I don't believe it in real life anymore.
Megan told me she had dreams like I was going to leave on the wedding day and all these things. And I, you know, you reassure. I think it's a pretty normal dream.
I agree. But I would say that, like, I mean, it was years past our wedding date that I think you truly felt it consciously.
Yeah. How long have you all been married? I forget.
5.5 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quite some time. But early on in our relationship, the reason that Nick always jabs me is because I was like, yeah, I love Star Wars. I've seen all the Star Wars. Does that make you like me more? And you liked it until I realized, oh.
I did. It worked.
What have I gotten myself into?
And now you're watching Spaceballs.
I don't know if you can see behind us. We have a whole shrine of Star Wars in our house.
Which is funny because not only has she embraced it, but she has found ways to, like, sort of add to it. So, for example, the stuff that's behind me is not stuff I have.
I bought you all of that.
Yeah. So,
you know. Right. I get the sense he's not a hard person to get gifts for.
People love getting Nick gifts because he's, like, a large child.
I mean, I am pretty much excited to get anything. Even, like, socks I get excited about. So,
but also Star Wars runs the world because Disney runs the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Disney runs, the only Disney run I ever did, I did a Star Wars half marathon in Orlando the year we were getting married. I was sick as a dog, but I did it for love.
So she's the runner, and so you were doing it with her for that reason?
We actually both, I married into a family that runs on holidays, you know what I mean?
No.
So like 50 trots and things like that. And so it was something that we did as a group. She ran it, I ran it, her father, my father-in-law, we ran it. And I actually was running with a little Yoda backpack the whole way, like I was Luke Skywalker in the swamp. And I got a real sweaty back.
I'm sure it wasn't.
Felt like I was cold. In the swamp. And I'm pretty sure I had a cold, but you do it for love.
What would you say is like the farthest from your, this is Ed, this is his personality, that you've ever like kind of compromised for love, aside from running half marathons?
Well, actually, I don't know. I think that I'm pretty go with the flow kind of person. I'm not a very, well, here's the truth of it, is I am so agreeable / conflict averse that I will just sort of go with it and then not realize until we're well into something that, you know, it's not something I would have done. But I mean, I had run a small amount of races before that. So it's not like this was a brand new thing. I'm sorry I can't answer your question. I don't really think I can think of the time where I had to bend the most. I don't have an eye for aesthetics. So like if we're talking about throw pillows and things like that.
There you go.
Like I remember we had a party for, I think it was Owen's baptism or something. And we had rented the space and she had me go check it out. And she said, what did you think? And I was like, oh, it's good. It's big. And she was like, but what like colors were the walls? Couldn't tell you to this day.
That sounds like something that would happen for me for the baby shower. You at one point were like, do you want to go check out the space? And I was like, what information do you think you're going to glean I go check out this space without you?
Nothing at all.
But yeah, now I kind of know to ask questions about what I should be looking for.
There you
in
go.
These places. But no, I was clueless. Did not recognize. I was like, this will fit the amount of people we are inviting.
You're very like, what's the word I'm looking for? Analytical.
Pure pragmatism.
Yeah, pragmatic.
Yep.
Understood.
Yep.
Do you feel like your wife has done anything big?
Yeah, what would she say she has given up for love?
Oh, I would say when she went to Wisconsin in the wintertime while pregnant with Owen was a big one. We didn't have a winter coat that would be like sufficient to zip.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Having that struggle now, actually.
Yeah. So, yeah, as a lifelong Floridian for her, winter visits to Wisconsin. We did another one this past December, and it was absolutely magical and wonderful. We saw a little snow. We left on New Year's Eve, and it was before you guys got dumped with all the snow. But it was enough for my son to say, like, my wish came true.
Oh,
it's Christmas magic.
Stop it.
It wasn't enough to make a snowball, but his wish came true.
Oh, that's so sweet.
See, that's the things I look forward to as a too emotional person. And
oh, I tell you what, and the vocabulary he's using and stuff now, he will just like, he read a book with us one time and he'll pick up a word and it's just like, he's throwing it out there. It's incredible. And then like, you know, the first 6 weeks are hard because the baby's not smiling at you, but then they start smiling at you and you're getting a little something back, which is great. And then they get a little older and you can have a conversation with them. It's amazing.
That's so cute.
My heart's melting just imagining that.
You've got good stuff coming.
I was telling someone last night that I think when I give birth, Nick will cry.
Oh, 1,000%.
And I will not.
I think you probably will too. If nothing else, for pain.
Thank you so much.
I mean, I suspect that.
Honestly, there's no way to predict how you're going to feel in that moment.
Yeah.
It's the most life-altering thing a person can do.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. Although I also, speaking of a weepy guy and movies and everything like that, I was watching The Fundamentals of Caring, because there's another podcast plug for former guest Dr. Swan. And I think you've been a guest on his podcast.
He just did that. Just dropped that episode.
Yeah. And I had seen it. And then I was like, well, I don't know if I remember that movie or if I've seen that movie. Still not entirely sure if I'd watched it again. Anyway, watched it today while I was walking to work out. And there's a line in there where somebody asked something about him being a father, Paul Rudd being a father. And he said, like, you know, it's what we're here for. It's like what we're.
Oh, there are going to be movies that hit you now differently than they ever did before. Like, I mean, I was already weepy in Pixar movies. Now I have no chance.
We're just going to become big mushes.
Oh, boy. All right. Get ready for the wreckage.
Yeah, like some films, like I've heard Interstellar, once you're a parent, hits way different. You know, it's just.
Yeah, someone on our podcast talked about that.
Ah.
Remember?
I don't remember who talked about as a parent. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways. Yeah. I'm excited to see the shift and the magic through a child's eyes. But the thing, a big thing that I've done for love recently is get pregnant.
Yeah, I you didn't say it. I was going to say, I take back my answer. The biggest thing she did was have
bare children.
Because I am speaking to two men right now, but. So you'll never, unfortunately, be able to truly feel what it's like.
Sure.
But it fucking sucks.
It's so easy for us to say, like, we would take it if we could. If we could, we would take all
Nick
the
says that every day. Every day. And I appreciate it so much.
And Nick, I believe you. I believe myself when I say I believe you.
But you're right. It is easy to say, given that there's low stakes for the commitment.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, if the procedure was invented tomorrow, where all of a sudden it's like, guess what, you can. I'm not 100% of the men who said it.
You're like, we're done with kids. That's it. I would have if we didn't already have two, you know. Earlier you were talking about, like, you guys are really good at, like, not compromising, but communicating and, like, figuring out each other's needs and picking up the slack and stuff. Early on in this pregnancy, I was, like, very sick. Like, the sickest I've ever felt in my entire life. And Nick and I are usually good. He was like, you know, sometimes it's 60-40, even 20-80. That's how we are. And he's like, I'm going to need you to give me 1% today. And I looked him in the eye. I said, I can't do that. And I rolled over and I went back to bed.
And she was completely
hard.
Honest.
That was a hard day for us.
That sounds like it was a doozy. Yeah.
I'm sure everybody has those. You know, I really like like Brene Brown, I think, talks about, you know, at least I think it's her. You know, she talks about marriage is not 50-50. Like, it is sometimes 70-30, sometimes 90-10, sometimes 50-50. Sometimes each of you only has 30% to give. If you're lucky and if you work hard at it, you'll be able to collectively figure out how to make 100% or a little bit more days than not.
Well,
days, though, you also have, like, she's at zero and I'm at two. Yeah.
And, you know, sort of a good example is to, like, identify maybe one of you has significantly stronger, like, sleep needs, right? As just an adult, and that you function better when you get more sleep. And I can function on less sleep and Megan needs a little bit more to function. And so even though I couldn't do what she could do when he was a newborn and breastfeeding and all that I was still like, if there was a diaper to be changed at night, that was me, right? Because that's what I could do. And now, like, if a baby or a toddler or whatever wakes up in the night, I'm the first one to check. It doesn't mean that if I tap her and say, like, I really need you to check, that she won't, right? She will. But I also know that I can check 2-3 times in the night and go right back to sleep. Whereas if she does, she's going to be awake for another hour, whether that little guy goes down or not. And so it just wrecks her in a way that it doesn't quite do it to me. And so, like, you figure out where your strengths are, where the other person's strengths are, And another way that it was put, similar to the Brené Brown idea, is like, it doesn't have to be equal, but it has to be fair. And so I think that it was put to me at a teaching conference about group projects, but I think it applies here.
Yeah, and I think that the important thing there that you sort of got into without stating it explicitly, though, is like sort of how you define fairness. And so it makes me think about psychological concepts and things like that. And there's different ways to define fairness. And you could look at equality, you could look at equity, or you could look at need. And you articulated, the doing it out of need, essentially. You know what I mean? Like, what is someone's capabilities? And I think about, there's other places in our lives, and sleep is one of them, because I am like your wife. Like, if I'm up, I'm probably going to be up for an hour. So that's one of the things we've been talking about, is like, she says, well, she wants emotional support. And I'm like, okay, I want to try and give that for you. But like, let's also notice and respect that, you know, if we get up at 2 a.m, you're probably going to be able to go back to bed if the kid's back to bed by 2:10. Me, I'm not. I'm going to be up for at least another 30 minutes. And so,
oh man, we've talked to some couples that said like, oh, they alternate days. And I'm just saying, that sounds worse. Like,
yeah. We have a friend that, you know, they plan out basically one of them does from 6 p.m. to midnight, and then the other one does from midnight to 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. And for us, we're like, we know that is, we already don't feel like we probably see enough of each other, you know, just given that the kid's going to be involved and given that we have work. Like, I would never want to intentionally introduce this other thing, but that works for them. You know what I mean? And I agree. And that's sure. And that's the important piece there, is it's like the communication about figuring out what it is each of you does have as needs so that you can meet that person there. I think early on in our relationship, and so if there is somebody who's taking any kind of advice from this, I think one thing that is common, and I know we have this happen too, there's this like, it's a normal human nature to be like, I experience the world this way, and therefore I am wired to assume that everyone else is experiencing the world this way as well. And so that point about like even just sleep, it's like what sleep is for you and what your needs are, it's like this whole new foreign concept that someone, you know, would have it differently. And so the first time somebody pushes back and says like, well, no, that's not how I want to do things or whatever, it feels unfair. And it can feel very much like, well, we're not giving the same. It's totally unfair. This is how I'm doing it. Why am I doing all of the laundry and you're not doing any of it, right? It's like, why am I doing the dishes? Why am I cleaning the bathrooms? You know, whatever it is, you just have to communicate to figure out where do we each lie on these things.
Yeah, and you're going to, you know, come across these things that are unexpected too. Like, Danny, you were raised a different way than Nick. Nick was raised a different way than Danny. And so it's like you're on the same page, but then you sort of assume the other person's on the same page as you. And then you're like, oh, I didn't. Why'd you do that? I wouldn't have done that. And so you definitely, there's going to be some real time figuring it out as you go. But that's it. Well, like you said, parenting is just one of those things that you can only learn it by doing it.
Yeah. I think I'm also thinking a lot about, we said, the things you do for love. And I think that has a negative connotation a lot of times of like, I'm giving up something or I'm.
Yeah, really... but it's also like acts of service, right? Like you say.
Yeah, exactly. But also like, I think it's also helping you and your relationship evolve. Like, I think about, I know something Nick did very large for me, besides getting me kitty cats, was because he said he would never get a cat, and now we have two.
My asthma is regretting that decision. But
no going back.
We're here.
Is he knows that we're probably not going to move out of Chicago. Oh. And originally, early on in our relationship, especially being a faculty member, he talked about, hey, we might have to move, and we got very, very close one time to having to move to Kansas, and not even good Kansas, Manhattan, Kansas. And so that brought up a very large conversation of, like, is this compromise? Is this not working out in our relationship? Or, because the relationship is the most important piece, how do we each kind of shift our ideas and perspectives around that?
Yeah.
And I think that can happen with a lot of things, but you have to feel like you're not compromising your whole soul, I think.
Yeah. And then the other thing that, so when we first asked, you know, what have you given up, or, you know, what has your wife given up? The other thing that occurred to me, because you said, you know, you just got to communicate those things. But the other thing is like, and this is such a cliche, but the communication has to continue, because I think the other thing that a lot of relationships do is they sort of like, they feel like they've gotten to know each other. And, you know, there's often kind of Danielle will turn to me and be like, do we just know each other too much? Do we have nothing to talk about anymore? Yes, but I think the other thing is you don't stop growing just because you're an adult. You don't stop growing just because you're married. You don't stop growing and changing who you are as a person, as far as I can tell, literally at any point of your life. So, you know, some of those changes will be big, many of them will be small, but that constant communication is the only way that you can, you know, articulate those things. If you'd have told me, my biggest fear when we were talking about, for example, moving or not, would be that, like, I would stay in Chicago and then I would be really bitter and hold it against Danielle and it would ruin our relationship or what have you. Just the opposite. I would never want to leave now the area of Chicago that we're in. And I was just talking to somebody about this the other day who's in a similar situation, so.
Yeah.
Good old Chi-Town. I miss that city. I haven't been back there in too long. The last time I was there, I think, was my bachelor party. I went to a Cubs game that was a rainout.
And oh, so no. Then we... Well, that's fine by me because we're Sox fans in this house, so. Boo.
Other sacrifices that one has to make. That one was easier. But yeah, I think that's a lot of it's a lot of what people I think need to keep in mind. It's that constantly figuring out anew what one's needs are and figuring out what one's partner's needs are and being willing to be okay if those needs change. Because there's other times where I think that's happened to us. So what's something you think you can think of, Ed, that either you or your wife, you know, maybe had a hard stance on and then over time have genuinely changed? So, you know, maybe at the beginning of your relationship, it would have been like, yeah, this is something they're definitely sacrificing for my partner. But over time, it's become like, you know what? I am actually okay with this on my own.
That is tricky, but so an example that comes to mind, it was a product of the pandemic.
Okay.
And so both of us had stay-at-home moms when we were little. Both of us have careers, so like something's got to give, right? And so we were looking at daycares and all of these things, and finding a daycare where you feel comfortable is a big challenge, right? And some days it was good. Some days it was really not good. And there was a period where we're like, we got to find something better. And then all of a sudden, boom, pandemic. Everyone's home. No one's going anywhere. And so then for a year-ish, we were working from home with our one-year-old, right? He turned, you know, March 17th was like literally right as everything was shutting down in 2020. So we got a one-year-old. And it was a kind of a weird time because, like, in our own little bubble, like, we had time and space to grow with him that we wouldn't have had otherwise,
which was
really special. But then you fast forward to when our second baby comes in January of 21. And so now working from home and just sort of splitting time, doing all these things, it's not going to work. And we got a nanny to come to our house. And I had this big mental hurdle of, like, are we British? Are we living in the Hamptons? Like, I don't know a single person who had a nanny.
Uh-huh.
And now we're the Banks family and Mary Poppins. I don't get it. And it was challenging for me, but it was 100% at that time in our life, the exact thing that we needed. And so, you know, cost is always going to be an issue and all these things. And we kind of evaluated, it's like, okay, two children in daycare or one nanny, you know, it's like it was more comparable for a pair of children than it had been for one. And we've had a part-time nanny at least ever since, even though now our kids are doing like half days and stuff like that, that it, you know, the boys come home and they're exhausted and they just have the person that is like a part of our extended family. And that took some coming around for me. But I don't know if that answers your question, but that's the example that came to mind.
Yeah, no, I think it does. You know, it's maybe less so something that your wife was putting on you or a sacrifice, you know what I mean? But I think it is the exact same thing. It's like you have this sort of knee-jerk gut reaction of this is this thing that I'm worried about or this is this thing that seems so very un-me, and to allow for it in itself is a sacrifice. And then with time, you're sort of like, nah, I can't imagine life any other way. So yeah, that's perfect.
All right, Ed, the last time we had you on our podcast was Was it a year ago?
We're getting there, yeah. Stop.
Maybe. Was it last summer, maybe?
I can't remember.
I can't remember.
Well, it was around Father's Day.
That's right. It was around Father's Day. Okay. So that's June?
June-ish.
Okay. Like, so it's been a half a year.
For the two of us that have not had fathers to celebrate Father's Dad Day
Club.
With. But you will be celebrating Father's Day very soon, Nick. Aww. It will be a delight.
So sweet.
Thank you.
In those long 6 months that we've had, I know you gave advice last time on relationships and all of that. Do you have any other advice you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, I asked Megan what her advice would have been.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, what'd she say?
And she said, we've kind of been covering it, but just to be there for them. You know, it's like there are the days where you don't have more than 1% to give. And so it's like, okay, we're both going to have ups. We're both going to have downs. Try not to have the bottom outs at the same time. We try.
Yeah, right.
But no, like to be there emotionally, to be there physically, to be there when their feet are swelling during pregnancy and they need a foot rub and all these different kinds of, not my favorite thing to do, but I did. And so it's, you definitely just be there for them. And so I thought it would be good to ask her what her answer to that question was. So that's the answer for this round.
I appreciate it. That. Yeah, I love that very much. And I do have to follow up with it, though, and ask, what movie would it take for us to get her to come join us next time? I mean, you guys just said, you have a nanny. Just have the nanny stay late. Have a babysitter come to help out. You know, whatever it takes.
So, first of all, I think she still doesn't want to. But the answer to that question is probably Father of the Bride.
Cute.
Yeah. And like, we watched that movie with her family before, you know, it was either when we were getting engaged or when her sister got engaged, when babies are on the way, we watched Father of the Bride Part 2, you know, it's, she loves those movies. I love Steve Martin, Martin Short, all these people. Those are some wonderful movies. And so that would probably be the one.
Okay. Well, we can make that work.
Noted. I'm going to write that down.
Ooh.
Father of the Bride.
He's also going to find your wife on social media or start messaging her and be like, hello, hi. Love it. All right, Nick, do you have anything else?
And she would reply, George Banks is saying no.
It has been so long since I actually saw Father of the Bride, but have you been watching Murders in the Building, Only Murders in the Building?
No, I didn't watch season 3. We started with season 3, and it wasn't quite the same joyful experience that the first two seasons were for us, so we're on a little hiatus there. I probably would have stuck it out. She is more likely to say, like, let's cut ties. This isn't as good.
We're you gone. Guys don't have a thing for Paul Rudd like Danielle does?
Mm-mm-mm. I probably do more than she does.
And Steve Martin is kind of a little zaddy, just because he's, like, funny and, yeah.
No, I think that there were some really fun elements, like Meryl Streep was killing it in that season for sure, but it just didn't feel the same. Like, season one was spectacular.
It
season
was.
Two, we enjoyed. In season three, she said, let's stop.
Yeah, so, that's fair. Yeah. That's fair. I will say, if you guys ever decide to go back to it, or if you're looking for something that's going to hit that family and paternal parent heartstring. That season, without spoiling anything later on, very much does that.
That's true.
Yeah, but no, and we need to get heading towards our movie that we're going to be talking about. But I was, Ed, how often do you work from home? We're working from home a lot these days.
Megan works from home every day, except for when she occasionally has to go in. I teach in person every day.
Okay.
So I'm not working from home except when the boys are sick and I have to zoom in or something like that.
Gotcha. Well, I work from home a lot. So I'm going to talk today about something that I've been drinking lately. It's this thing called Magic Mind.
Oh.
And it is a like blend of matcha and nootropics and adaptogens. And I had to Google what those words were. But I genuinely enjoy this product. And I have actually started to the point where I like started ordering it for myself after they had sent us some as an opportunity to talk about them here on the podcast. But
do they come in different flavors? Maybe I have to get Megan some Magic Mine.
I love it. I love it. No, it is all just one flavor. It's these tiny little shots, actually. And they kind of, you can do it in your morning cup of coffee. I like to actually just drink it right before I have breakfast. If you like matcha, it tastes mostly like matcha, but there's other different mushrooms and things like that in there. But it really genuinely does. And I realize how silly this sounds, okay? I know, like, people all roll their eyes when they hear these things. But I personally, just speaking from personal experience, have felt a higher level of flow state. And I now notice if I go too long, more than one day without sort of taking or drinking one of these things. And instead, with working from home, especially, I constantly am, like, distracted. I'm surrounded by all the cool things that one has in one's own house and can take you away from work very easily. But I find when I have drank Magic Mind in the morning, it keeps me focused and in a flow state and more able to sit and read or sit and do whatever technical work it is that I have to do, which can sometimes be a little bit mind-numbing. Also, in addition to that, so I recommend it, and to our listeners and movie lovers out there, this is the first time we actually have also a sponsorship with someone. So that's we have a sponsorship with Magic Mind, and right now, for the month of January, so by the time you hear this, there's only going to be a day or two left.
You better run.
Gotta run, all right? they are having a promotion where they will send you your first batch
for a month's worth of Magic Mind.
For free, entirely, if you go to magicmind.com/JAN, so Jan, like January, in love with movies. All right.
Well, I will benefit from this promotion.
All right.
That sounds nice.
/Jan, in love with movies. In addition to that, and past January, so if you are listening to this sometime in February or before or beyond, you can also still get 20% off if you go to their website and use the promotion code MOVIES20. So magicmind.com, get yourself some flow state, get yourself some little bit of energy, and make it through your days working from home.
It's magic! That's their slogan, right?
Sure. Yes, and.
Then it's going to make a dingle for Magic Mind. I think that that needs to happen.
It's time for Magic Mind. Ding.
All right. Well, I also know that I drink mine early in the morning. We record late at night, but I've considered drinking them for podcasts. So, you know, you can also do that next time you're trying to record or you want to focus for that. But we are done talking about love. We're done talking about Magic Mind.
We're done talking. Yeah, okay.
We are now going to move on to the second half of our podcast where we get to speak about everything having to do with what movie? Remind us again, Ed.
The satire of Star Wars and all things science fiction, Spaceballs.
Spaceballs.
Spaceballs, Spaceballs.
In love with movies. Da, da, da.
And we're back. Welcome back to In Love with Movies. I actually did the reintroduction better than I did the intro.
Yeah. You remembered how to podcast.
I remembered how to podcast. It has been months between recordings for us. We had batched a few for the holidays and everything like that.
Yeah.
And so it's been a minute. But
back.
We're back. We're back. And what movie lovers, for those of you who like the movie half of the podcast more than the love half, if I'm being honest, that's me. This is where the fun begins, because now we get to talk about an extra fun movie, Spaceballs, 1987. And because it was the year I was born, I looked up specifically when it was released. It was released in June, so it's just a few months older than I am. But it has been around basically my entire life. Not basically, literally my entire life. It was directed and written by Mel Brooks with his writing partners, Thomas Mahian and Ronnie Graham. Ronnie Graham is from, like, a lot of other Mel Brooks movies, basically. He also is the one who plays the minister in this, who kind of gets frustrated with them trying to perform the wedding ceremony.
Oh, I thought you meant the minister in Princess Bride.
That would have been another good one, but no, the minister in this, not quite as interesting as the minister in Princess Bride. But Thomas Mahian also wrote Producers and Hairspray. Seems like he's got a lot of musicals. It is starring Mel Brooks himself as a couple of different characters. And then we've got John Candy. Listeners and movie lovers may know John Candy from things like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles or Home Alone.
Uncle Buck.
Uncle Buck.
Right?
Cool Runnings. It goes
cool
on.
Runnings. Give me, ooh, yeah,
I mean,
a good
come
one.
On. He is, I realize for our generation especially, he is just one of those amazing comedic
man.
Character
Chris
actors.
Farley, John Candy, father-son movie that never happened. Oh. That would have, oh, Yeah, I think about that from time to time.
They both died too early, too young.
Too early.
Same things, I think, claimed them too. But
don't do drugs, kids.
Also in this movie is Rick Moranis. This was back when Rick Moranis was, you know, kind of a popular, so listeners, movie lovers might know.
Back when he was kind of popular.
Oh, he was in a lot of movies.
He decided to spend time with his family.
And I was actually, I'm glad you knew that. That is truly, that's the truth. That's why he stopped being in movies. In the 80s and early 90s, he was in movies all the time. He had a huge career going, and then he said, you know what? I've made enough money off enough of these things. I'm going to go be with my kids.
So he did. Little Shop of Horrors, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Honey, I Shrunk the... We shrunk our...
Honey, I Blew Up the Kids.
Yeah, I
Honey,
can't we remember
ourselves.
Yep.
All
yep.
the sequels were...
Yeah. Ghostbusters. Might be, you know, my favorite of his... But, I mean, he was... John Candy and Rick Moranis were both Second City TV alums, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So, yep. I mean, they've got all kinds of wonderful Canadian comedy ties to the improv world that Danny is well aware of. But, yeah, it's definitely a couple heavy hitters there.
Truly.
And they keep on coming. Because then we've got Bill Pullman, who I know most especially from Independence Day and that glorious, stirring speech that he gives. But Danielle, you would know him as the dad in Casper.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. We did just recently watch that.
Yeah, there you go. I actually read this was only Bill's second movie. So pretty big deal for him to get like a lead role in this. But Mel had seen him in an off-Broadway play. And just was like, this guy's got the energy I'm looking for. And he was, like, phenomenal in that role.
Huh.
This is exactly the kind of factoid that I love that you bring. I talked over you. I apologize,
Wasn't
Danielle.
He in Twister?
That is Bill Paxton.
Oh.
Bill Pullman, Bill Paxton. It's a common mistake.
Okay.
It is a common mistake. But I did not realize that this was only his second movie. And that is funny to me because Star Wars, and he's clearly playing the Han Solo... Also Luke Skywalker, you know, combined character. But Han Solo, Harrison Ford, was very early in his career and was coming off of Carpentry when he got cast as, you know, one of the leads for that movie. So that's an interesting duality there that they both kind of, in the similar role, got plugged for it. And then, of course, the voice of Joan Rivers plays Dot, the C-3PO amalgam. Mm-hmm. And then not to be forgotten, because our last episode for movie lovers who've been with us through all of these episodes, will know that we just watched The Sure Thing. And when we watched The Sure Thing, we happened to be commenting with our guests then that the only other movie I knew Daphne Zuniga from, Daphne Zuniga, yeah. Thank you, Ed, is this movie, Spaceballs. She plays the princess.
Other than those, it was Growing Pains, right? She was the sister in Growing Pains, I'm almost 100% sure. That's like where I knew her until I saw her in Spaceballs.
Huh. We didn't miss that.
I did miss that. I'm looking that up to verify it right now because I used to watch reruns of Growing Pains. But
she is very beautiful.
While I'm looking it up, Danny, did you have anything else to add? And then if not, give us your love story with this movie.
I actually thought originally the robot, I was like, I know that voice. I know it's a comedian. I thought it was, why do I keep blanking on her name? Pregnancy brain.
Joan Rivers? What are you talking about?
No, the other comedian I thought it was.
Carol Burnett.
Carol Burnett.
Oh, okay. Well, she does a lot of voice work, but yeah, Joan Rivers is pure Joan Rivers in this role, for sure.
She is.
Yeah.
R.I.P. My love story with this show, movie, never seen it till the other day. Next.
So, my love story with this movie... I don't think it is the first Mel Brooks movie that I ever saw, because I remember watching this movie in a house that I moved into later on in my life with my family, and I have a memory of sitting around the television in our old house watching Robin Hood Men in Tights, surely when it first hit VHS, and it was like one of those things where it was one of the first movies my parents let us come watch Robin Hood Men in Tights, and it was like the adult movie that the kids were permitted to witness. Having said that, I have always been a huge Star Wars fan, especially I was like right at the proper age when they were doing the special editions and re-releasing them into theaters. And so my brother and all of our friends and all of his friends became huge Star Wars nuts. And then only a few years later, as my brother was getting into like junior high, him and his friends started to become especially interested in, you know, some kind of screwball or offbeat comedies, which brought them to Mel Brooks, and brought them around to Spaceballs. So as I was sort of in the peak of my becoming the biggest Star Wars fan ever, right before Phantom Menace, is probably the first time I watched this movie on some during some sleepover where my brother and I each had like two or three friends over, and we were all cackling and making references to it as well as how it points out things in Star Wars.
Can I add, I had never seen these characters ever except for a couple last year, 2 years ago. Nick and I went to Star Wars Day in Joliet, and they had like a parade, and Dark Helmet and Barf came, and I was like, okay, I know I don't know all the Star Wars things, but I think I would have known these people. And then you said that was Spaceballs. So that was my first introduction to the characters. Ed, how about you?
Cosplays of Spaceballs characters is always going to get a big like from me. They are really fun costumes, and just, I mean, gosh, there was one cosplay I saw of Barf, the John Candy character, where it was so good. I was just like concerned for them. It was so good. I was like, stop smoking. I don't know if you're smoking. Stop smoking.
Did they do the ears? Did they figure out a way to like have the ears move? Because that was something we talked about being especially cool when watching this movie this time.
It was, I love the practical effects they do for the tail and the ears and everything. Just how it goes up with like curious eyebrows look and all that kind of stuff is really, really fun. But no, I don't think they did the ears. They were just spot on.
Okay.
Ed, what is your love story with this movie?
Fuzzy memories. my love story with this movie was I came across it when I realized I loved Mel Brooks' movies.
Sure.
And so I'm a completionist for him, and so I wanted to see them all. And it's funny because, like, I would say, you know, Mel Brooks is probably my favorite movie maker, and I really, really like Star Wars, but when I think about my favorite movies, I think of Mel, as opposed to this is every big Star Wars fan favorite Mel Brooks movie, because it's about what they love. And so, like, for me, it was another one. I don't know that he loved Star Wars as much. Like, he said his son was into it, and, you know, his son was really into Star Wars. They would go see these movies, and he was like, well, I loved Hitchcock, and I loved horror, and I loved Westerns, and I haven't done science fiction yet, so let's do it. And it had a little bit of that feel to me. And it was, I told you last time, my dad introduced me to the Mel Brooks movies, and I never think it was his favorite one either. And so that's the one that I sought out later. And so I was probably like an adolescent or teen when I saw it for the first time, didn't grow up with it. But yeah, in Mel's book, he talks about how some people saw this before the Star Wars movies, and they're like, why aren't these Star Wars movies more funny? You know,
that is funny.
I mean, there's a fair amount of similarity there for sure. I do get, having watched it now, and like we talked about this last time about how I think maybe there's some of your love for Young Frankenstein comes from your love of those Universal monster movies. But I will also have to agree that there's almost like a magic missing, or like it, and it, I think it fits because there's such a through line in this movie about the merchandising and the cash grab of it all. And this movie kind of feels like Mel Brooks and company being like, hey, you know what's really big right now? Those Star Wars movies. Let's go ahead and make a spoof about that because people will come to watch it.
A Star Wars.
And it wasn't a big commercial success in the theaters. It was actually like VHS is where it really made it big.
Okay.
But it wasn't a big hit initially. But a quick story about the merchandising stuff, because it is one of my favorite scenes in the movie, right? Where he's talking about Spaceballs, the t-shirt, Spaceballs, the flamethrower, all of it. But he had reached out to George Lucas as he was creating the film. He did the same with Hitchcock when he made the High Anxiety spoof, but if not for his blessing, just to sort of give him a heads up, like, hey, this is what I'm going to do. And George was into it. And you know, he said, I love Young Frankenstein. I love Blazing Saddles. But the one thing I'm going to ask you to not do is to sell action figures, is to sell merchandise, because that our lawyers are like, Dark Helmet's going to look way too much like Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, please don't do it. And Mel was like, you're right. That's one rule we didn't break. And so they wrote it into the movie and still had Dark Helmet playing with the action figures and things like that. But they didn't sell a single one. So that was them respecting George's wishes and or not wanting to get sued.
Yeah, because you don't want to piss off George Lucas. I feel like he's a very powerful man in the movie world, at least in the Star Wars world.
Yeah, those lawyers would be ones I wouldn't want to be on the wrong side of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially, like, even more so now that they're owned by Disney. I mean, now you got Lucasfilm and Disney lawyers after you. That'd be, whoo.
Yeah. No, thanks.
I do find it, I love that bit, especially because if you're then paying attention, either before, I think it probably is there too, but you did like cues your brain for the remainder of the movie. There are so many things that are just Spaceballs the X.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. President Scroob is like underneath Spaceballs the blanket, you know, in his bed.
And then he's like, there's Spaceballs the toilet paper when he's taking a leak.
Yep.
Later on, the guy's like shaving and he sneaks up behind him in the, you know, Spaceball One. Lone Star is sneaking up behind him for, and like he's using Spaceballs the shaving cream. And I'm pretty sure like at one point they give a shot and it's like Spaceballs the razor. Like it is literally every single thing that is a commercial product for the rest of the movie.
Twas smart. So Nick, before we get any farther.
I forgot to do something, didn't I?
Yeah. Do you want me to do it?
Yes, I do.
Should I do it?
Okay. I think you need to do it.
Time for Danny's Dingle.
Spaceballs. Is the name of the people? Dark Helmet. Penis joke. Penis joke. Penis joke. Princess Vespa. And what? Viagra? Whatever his name is.
I think it was Valium.
Not in love. Runs away. Princess, wait, father of the bride. Princess,
runaway bride? Is that
runaway bride.
That's what you're looking for.
RVs in space. Barf the Wog and Lone Star. Pizza the Hut is disgusting. I don't have to deal with this. I'm rich. Barf's ears. Colonel Sanders. Ludicrous speed. Mr. Coffee. This movie is quite sexist.
Yeah.
Yogurt. The Schwartz. Bloody, bloody, blah. Same plot as Star Wars, kinda. Comb in the desert. The bad guys blow up. Pizza the Hut eats himself, happily ever after. The end. Okay. You can tell it's a funny movie when I'm reading back my notes and I'm chuckling. I'm like, that was so dumb that it's funny.
And I know that you love the dumb jokes, and there are a lot of them.
Oh, yes. I would argue, I think, more in this than there was in Young Frankenstein. Like,
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yes.
Like, it is going for the cheap laugh in every scene.
Home in the desert, God, it kills me.
And you know what? I think it fits, given that I'm about to be a dad. I was watching this thinking to myself, I can't wait to show this to my son, because it is so full of dad jokes. Like, it is lazy pun after lazy pun. It is the definition of dad jokes.
He revels in putting in bad jokes that are just like, this is so bad, it's going in. And then he'll make, like, a joke about, like, you know, Kafka or something that is just like totally out of left. So he's like this super highbrow, super lowbrow at the same time. Mm-hmm. Is something I've always really loved about him. And I know that there's jokes I'm not getting, but then there's the ones that everybody gets, like the radar is jammed.
Yes.
You know, it's just.
Yes.
Yeah. I was thinking after this movie, now I'm going to be very honest. Mel Brooks' humor is very sexist and like, not all of it's sexist. But very male-leaning and very,
it's very
like,
male-oriented perspective.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
However, his timing and his commitment is, like, comedy gold. Like, he is one of the smartest comedic writers, I think, I've ever seen because of how shocking some of the things are. Like, you don't even think, I think there's, like, six times I looked over here, I was like, did that really just happen? And it does. And he just goes with it. And then the movie continues. And it's like, yes, this is what the movie is. So that's why I find him very brilliant. I also think Robin Hood Men in Tights is him, too.
Yep.
Yes.
I had never seen that movie before I met Nick. And holy cow, I laughed so hard at some of those things. He bonks his head on the... I can't even remember, but he walks in somewhere, hits his head so hard, and I was like, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Uh-huh. Well, we do need to watch that one again, and maybe that'll be when we can get Ed back on again for you as well. But I will say...
you know that you can always pull me back with Mel Brooks. I love him, I hate him. It's like, if you need someone for one of those movies, I'll be there.
All right, pencil it in 8 months from now. That seems to be our cadence, so... I remember you really enjoyed it. And the reason I remember, and maybe it's because I was young when I first saw it, but this time I feel like I didn't catch a joke that I wasn't like, oh, I remember that joke. I do feel like of the like probably five times in my entire life that I've watched, Men in Tights, I have watched it and been like, oh, I missed that joke. Cause it'll be something that's like said subtly, or I've grown and learned, or there's a lot of them in there that are way more, could sneak by you compared to Spaceballs, which is just like 2x4 to the head with every single joke. Danielle, when they did the combing the desert, she literally just like put her face in her palms.
Also, when Mel Brooks goes, Spaceballs 2, the search for more money. It's very funny. All right.
Honestly, that's what I think of, like, with all the Peter Jackson splitting The Hobbit into the three movies and everything. I'm like, it's all Spaceballs to the search for more money. Every one of them.
Yeah, there's lots of, I mean, especially today. Like, I feel like that is what most movies are. They just don't even
bother
unless
they. They
remake
every movie now.
Yeah.
It's not original.
And if they can, they'll remake it as two movies.
Yeah. Yes.
Or a trilogy.
However they can milk it for the most.
Okay, I have a controversial thought, maybe. Okay. Was Rick Moranis the right person for Dark Helmet?
I would argue that, he was. Because he is weak, he is small.
Very small.
And his helmet... is massive, and his Schwartz is bigger than yours. You know, it's just, I think that there was a reference to penis jokes in your dingle about Young Frankenstein also.
Well, that movie, because the punchline of the whole movie was a penis joke.
Yeah.
I will say, like, my least favorite humor, and this is coming from the improv world, where it's like, can we get a suggestion of an object? Penis! Dildo! You know, like, that's my least favorite jokes, but like when you think of smart, dumb things like combing the desert, that's it. You get me there. But I will say it is funny that they like had to keep covering their private parts because that's where Dark Helmet struck.
Yes.
Well,
they turn around and they're worried.
Which it's also funny to me, like it makes you kind of think, oh, well, maybe it's a little bit homoerotic there, Mel Brooks, because they clearly, you know, when they start turning on their Schwartz lightsabers, it is a dick joke because they put their hands down there. And then also apparently he uses it to attack people's dicks. So maybe it's a little bit of,
Is Schwartz Yiddish for penis?
I'm pretty sure not. I'm pretty sure that he just knew someone whose last name was Schwartz. It was like his lawyer's last name.
I do remember, like, thinking it sounds like that, though. It sounds like exactly that. It'd be some slur for dick and balls. Go ahead. No?
Oh, I didn't have anything to add to that.
Ed, what did you... give us something. I think I'm talking too much. I thought I was going to interrupt her. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll give you a little... I mean, like, when you think about... Gosh, I don't love this movie, but I love bits in this movie. There are so many bits. Like... I'm surrounded by assholes and all of these different kinds of things. I mean, like Colonel Sanders, ludicrous speed. They've gone to plaid. I love all the bits more than I love the movie itself. Cause like you talk about how it's a sexist movie and it is. I was watching this and I was like, Danny's going to have some thoughts. And so like, if the story feels old, this is really interesting. It's because it is. Yeah. It was like loosely based on, it happened one night from 1934. And it happened one night is like this Clark Gable, Colette Colbert movie about an heiress who's going to marry a boring guy, escapes, falls in love with like a normal run-of-the-mill Clark Gable character. And so they kind of took that plot, they put it in space. This is all according to Mel's book, which is really, really a wonderful book to learn about the background of these movies. And so in 1934, it swept the Oscars, right? In 1934, it was like best picture, best director, best writing, best actor, best actress. And now it's like the luggage jokes and all the sexist jokes about the hairdryer and all this stuff. It was, you know, that it just felt tired, right? But yeah, I think that part of that is because he took this really, really old plot that was like Hollywood royalty plot. I've never seen that movie, but I started watching a little of it the other night. Didn't get through it all, but you can see the similarities, even though there's more sexism perhaps in that one from 1934.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to say is like his doing it in 1987. So not only is it like our sensibilities of 2024 looking back at 1987, which is a long time.
Sure.
On top of that, he's based it on something that's from 40 years before that. So really, like, there's this undercurrent then to the whole movie and the plot and the jokes of 80-year-old sensibilities when it comes to gender roles. So
yeah, Princess Vespa is not a progressive character.
No. And, you know, in the last movie we watched her in, she also sucked.
As a character.
Yeah, she, like...
was kind of the same thing, actually.
Yeah,
like,
just
it had
let
a boring
men take
dude.
Care of her, yeah. Anyways. But I think what's interesting, and this is not... it's just... it is what it is, and it's of the time, but, like, I think I look at this... a lot of the movies we watch from, like, 80s, especially 80s, and I'm like, there are no women in these movies. There's, like, one or two, and they're weak little babies. And it must be the way that people of color feel when they're watching even movies
today,
way more recent than that, of like, I don't even see myself in it. It's just so interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the roles just weren't very good.
Yeah.
Right? And so, yeah, I think that even people who love Mel Brooks movies, you look at his whole filmography and it's just, he's a man. It's a very male perspective, right? And it wasn't something that you really think about as a kid growing up. But when you look back at it, now, it is interesting, like, he's had a lot of successful writing partners and stuff that were women, like when he was doing TV before movies and all that stuff. But, yeah, he wasn't going out of his way to make better roles for women. But you could argue it wasn't his job to do that at the time. But that I don't think it was portraying them badly. It's just not great.
It was status quo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Status quo.
And I think Mel Brooks... you can't do it all. He couldn't be the savior of it all. But he did a really good job of, like, breaking comedy. Like, changing comedy and changing the way. Like, the fourth
and
wall,
like,
breaking.
If we're feeling brave, someday we could do Blazing Saddles. And you can really see, like, how he took on the topic of the times, racism. And people always say, you know, it couldn't get made today. It's like, well, a different movie will get made today. That's okay. It doesn't have to get made today. And so, yeah, in a different lifetime, he might have done a really cool feminist comedy, but that just wasn't in the cards for him.
Yeah, it wasn't where the boundary was to push. And it's interesting you mentioned Blazing Saddles. I'll try not to go off on too much of a tangent. I was listening to another podcast today, Factually, and he was talking about sort of the push now of like, oh, comedians can't be funny. Like, I can't make the same jokes. And the point that he had, his guest has written a book about and was talking about the history of comedy and said, like, at the same time Blazing Saddles was top of the box office, the same jokes were still happening on comedy stage, stand-up comedy stage, and Richard Pryor was literally being arrested for making that joke. And so it's all about, like, where you're able to do it and where you've gotten away with doing it. And Mel Brooks, that's the thing that I think he did do so brilliantly, is whatever the joke was, he knew how to be able to push it, but, like, do it in such a way that you're going along with it, you know what I mean? And got
it was subversive. It was subversive. Yeah. He was sneaking things in there that people weren't going to, you know, be upset about. They find themselves laughing. They don't always know why they're laughing. But I don't know. Spaceballs doesn't have any of that.
Well, what I do think Spaceballs has, because I'm clearly going to have to be the Spaceballs defender on this episode, and that's totally fine. I'm live in that space of being Star Wars defender. I will recognize its flaws, as I do in Star Wars. But the thing I think I had an appreciation of this time watching it is one of my first notes was, oh, the person who wrote this had to genuinely know, had to genuinely know Star Wars front and back and know, like, what was brilliant about Star Wars and know what was flawed about Star Wars. So some of the first two jokes are the opening crawl.
In the opening credits.
Yes, the opening crawl. The fact that he is starting with an opening crawl, because that was so groundbreaking for Star Wars just a few years before it. But then Star Wars, for those who don't know, was originally released with an opening crawl that just said Star Wars. And then Empire Strikes Back. Yeah, oh, you mean maybe it looks like Ed didn't even know that. Yeah, when it was first done, Episode 4 was not a thing. They released it as Star Wars. It wasn't until re-releases that they added the Star Wars. However, before Spaceballs came out, Empire, and I'm pretty sure maybe even Jedi, Return of the Jedi had come out. I know Empire Strikes Back had. Empire Strikes Back comes out, and it suddenly says Episode 5. And people were like, what the F? You know what I mean? Like, what? And so Spaceballs starts with chapter 11, and it's just like right out the gate. And I got to imagine that chapter 11 was a choice for bankruptcy, because that's the type of bankruptcy.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
But it's also,
I love how in the crawl there were already jokes making me laugh. Like, I love his little play on word turns of phrase kinds of things. He's like, unbeknownst to the princess, but knownst to us.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And then it ends with, if you could read this, you don't need
glasses. You don't
glasses.
Need glasses.
Okay, great.
Which is another thing I think I also made a note of, and I'll go off on that small tangent. This movie was the first thing that really made me see fourth wall breaking as comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is constantly in this movie, from like just turning left and right. But the appreciation for Star Wars part that I wanted to say was also the first shot. Not only is the opening crawl something that was new, the first shot of Star Wars with that ship coming in, and it's, you know, the battle that is taking place. And it is... like in Star Wars,
it's like
itself,
a 10-minute scroll of the
and that's
ship.
Just it. Like, so not only does he like, here's this absurd thing, Episode 5, what are you doing, George Lucas, is what Mel's saying, but then also being like, hey, here's this amazing, brilliant shot that was at the time just known for how cool it was and how technically amazing it was, and now I'm gonna crack a joke about that too, because it's just the longest ship that ever existed for no reason.
It was funny.
Did you see what it said on the bumper sticker as the ship pulls away too?
What does it say?
We break for nobody.
Oh.
Yeah.
There's a running thing of bumper stickers and vanity license plates, because later on, let's see, what is it? Break for nobody. Heart. I heart Uranus. And then her license plate is spoiled rotten.
It is funny.
Yeah. No, I wonder, as like a super fan of Star Wars, like, what was your favorite take that he did on Star Wars? And what was one that you're like, you missed the mark, or if there was one like that? Like, for me, the ones that come to mind are like yogurt, just plain yogurt. I really enjoy yogurt. He's so delightful as that. But I laugh so hard at the sand people doing the Bridge of the River Kwai song, just singing dink, 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 dink.
Yeah,
dink,
they're
dink,
called
dink, dinks. Dink.
They are all named Dink.
Is that, I'd miss that.
On IMDb. Every single one of them is Dink.
No, I love the Dink Dinks a lot.
That's actually awesome.
Because they also have like other science fiction references in the movie too, besides Star Wars.
Yes.
Which I've got one or two favorites there too. But like I asked you, what are your favorite things that they got right or didn't get right?
So I really liked that funny bit, because it is taking something that I think was an appreciation for what Star Wars did. Like I said, that glorious technical shot, and then turning it into absurdist. So I appreciated that a great deal. I also, as someone who sort of recognizes the capitalism of it all, and we were talking about George Lucas's only concern when Mel talked to him about it, like, that is a really good joke.
Merchandising.
Like, so good. I'm trying to think of things that I think
were missed.
Yeah.
They're forcing a joke with this Schwartz thing, because it kind of sounds like force. And then at the end with the, I don't know. I just didn't find all of a sudden the rings can do lightsabers. Oh, and then.
It's like Mel keeps, you talk about his commitment. He keeps saying, may the Schwartz be with you. Like, this time it's going to make you laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the one thing that I was like, this is force so much and it's not. Like, you could find something else that was closer to force. Like Yoda yogurt.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. Like, you're saying you felt like Mel was trying to say, like, just every time you say, may the Schwartz be with you, it was its own joke that he thought was going to get a laugh. In my head, I guess I just saw it as, it's like a word that he came up with.
A joke written for one of his friends. That's it. He was like, Schwartz is going to love this.
Yeah.
That probably is
but
true.
It's not funny to anyone else.
I will say, I think the one thing that stood out to me, and you giving the context of, what was the name of the movie that it was, the plot was loosely based on again?
It Happened One Night.
Thank you. I think. Okay, yeah. So that I know that's a movie. It kicked something in my brain. I just needed to remind it. Because of that, they play off Princess Vespa as even more, you know, useless, vapid, etc. And I was thinking to myself that, like, I guess if you just look at the first Star Wars, she kind of seems in some ways, at the very beginning, a little bit like, oh, I need your help. But even in that first movie, she's the one who's like, get in there, flyboy. And, you know, Princess Leia is kicking ass, you know. And I think by the time this movie came out, she may have even killed Jabba, like I said, if Jedi had come out. So, like, to take a character that was such a strong female character and then do the exact opposite. Yeah. You know, that's something.
And then, like, the only time she shows the strength is like, you shot my hair.
And, yes. Know, yes. Yeah. Even the strength is like a feminine or anti-feminist joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, Joan Rivers is a very strong female.
Yeah.
Period. Like, she was progressive for her time. Yeah. And she didn't get as many good jokes in the movie that I feel they could have used her for.
I mean, she was good in it, but she could have been highlighted more and it would have been good. You know, I think I also like, even though he is disgusting, I think Pizza the Hut is a pretty great visual gag.
I thought to myself, Pizza Hut is no longer as popular, I don't think. And so I feel like people today wouldn't get Pizza the Hut. But I loved Pizza Hut back in the day. So continue.
Oh, book it, man. Personal pan pizzas. But no, like Dom DeLuise, his buddy, is in there as Pizza the Hut. And so he, you know, that's a wonderful role for him too. But I think that the whole thing, you know, it works. It's got some really enjoyable moments. Like, even with Danny's Dingle, like you said, we're laughing at the memories of these funny bits. Mm-hmm. And, like, the Alien reference, they got the actor from Alien who had the Alien burst from his chest, John Hurt.
He says, not again!
And then he does the even older reference of, like, the Looney Tunes frog with the top hat and the cane singing.
Hello, my baby. Hello, my nut. Yeah, at one point, I, like, really had to pee. Obviously, that's my life these days. And Nick paused it, and I saw there was, like, I don't know, 50 minutes left. And I was like, are you kidding me? Because this is so funny, but to me, this is, like, an SNL skit. You know, this is a couple of SNL skits, the super funny pieces.
Yeah, it's like when they turn an SNL sketch into a movie, it's like, does this have to be a movie? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Ed, and I'm glad you have the same perspective as, like, the movie itself. I found myself tuning out a lot, but then he would always bring me back in with something very, very stupid. But overall, I'm like, I don't remember the movie that much. I don't know. I'm sorry to hate on this one for you.
It's okay. Like I said, I can respect, you know, whether or not something is technically as good of an achievement.
I was telling Megan, it was like, it's kind of fun to do a Mel Brooks movie that is not my favorite.
Yeah.
Like, you know, to just look at it without the romanticized view and just like, okay, as its own comedy, what I think about this movie.
Yeah.
So the comedy hits, the plot, not so much. Also, another thing that was really funny and really dumb is when they were like watching themselves in real time on a VHS tape of all the Mel Brooks movies, right? In there.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's funny to me, too, about, I didn't write this down, but I was thinking of it as we were watching, like, they're like, oh, no, with the advancements of technology, we can have the movie available on video cassette before it's even hit theaters. And, like, that's kind of in some ways where we are right now, you know, with the whole, like, day-and-day release of, you know, obviously they can't watch it while making the movie.
No, and that's a wonderful visual gag where they're just looking at the camera, looking back. It's just nice. It's fun. It's always good.
Yeah. It's a real silly one. I want to talk more about too, about the other movies that are referenced. But to get with that, there was a couple of other wardrobe things that I thought were just hilarious and perfect. Her headphones when they're about to be attacked. And
when she took them off.
She takes them off. Yeah. Like you think, oh, it's going to be. And then it's actually not hair. It's headphones. But then also when we first get to Bill Pullman as Lone Star, he is wearing a Indiana Jones-esque fedora, which I thought was a cool little nod to like who this person was and letting you know that, oh, this is the Indiana Jones character, the Han Solo,
this is the
in case
Ford
you didn't
type.
Know it. Yeah.
Except for he wears like just a plaid button up shirt underneath a like Han Solo jacket, which I thought was kind of funny. And the best character in this movie is Barf.
Oh,
John,
he's his own best friend.
Yeah.
My own best friend.
He kills it. He really does kill it.
That was like, that role was written for John Candy because I don't think he acted that much. I think that's who he is.
I tell you what, I mean, yeah, watching that every time he speaks, I'm just smiling. And like some of the stuff, you know, he improvised, like just crazy things, like when the Winnebago crashes into the desert, he's like, oof, that's going to leave a mark. And that was just, you know, something that he came up with on the spot. He's just had, you know, a wonderful presence in this movie.
To take it back to, we were talking earlier about Chris Farley and the movie that we never got that we would have.
Yeah.
I immediately thought of Chris Farley because I've seen him say that line in a couple of movies.
So what other movies are referenced? These are the ones I caught. Star Trek.
I was going to say, there's Star Trek.
Beam Me Up, Scott. Spotty.
What's his name? It wasn't Scotty. What was it?
Snotty. I was going to say, it was some stupid joke. Yeah, Snotty.
And then he's trying to beam himself. He's like, never mind, I'll just walk. And he walks into the next room.
I had remembered that joke. And so I was watching Danielle to see her reaction to it.
That was very funny. Then there's The Wizard of Oz.
Uh-huh.
Then there's
we talked about Alien.
Transformers.
Transformers for sure.
And what else? What did I miss?
Planet of the Apes at the very end.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Because you didn't know that because you were like, I've never seen the original Planet of the Apes. And I was like, this is almost a shot for shot.
And then there was just like big advertisement for Mr. Coffee, Mr. Rental, Mr. like all their gadgets were called Mr.
Radar.
Something.
Yeah.
Mr. Radar.
Did we miss any, Ed? Did you catch any that we didn't name?
Only that the guy who does all of the sound effects from the Police Academy
the
movies
bleeps.
Also does like beep, beep, boop, you know, the radar. And I love that. Like I said, I know that he's referencing some older ones that I am less familiar with, but yeah, those are the ones that I caught too.
Yeah, I can't think of any other. So did they name him Lone Star because that was his reference to Western? Like, why was that his name?
Probably Solo. You know what I mean? You
oh,
have to think of,
duh.
And they like chose to have a Winnebago, and yeah, he's a bit of a like cowboy-esque character, so you know. But lone, solo, single. Yeah, I'm sure that was the reasoning.
Got it. And the Virgin Alarm. So dumb.
Yeah, speaking of dated.
Well, I mean, they do the same thing in Robin Hood.
Yeah.
They do the same thing in Men in Tights. They do the same joke where she's wearing the iron chastity belt.
Yep, you're right.
And then her, like, you know, I don't know what the role would be called, but she's like, not until you're married. And
uh-huh,
so he like,
uh-huh.
did that in two straight movies, basically. I think there was one stuck in between there, but still, it was like, if he likes a joke, he'll go back to it.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of confidence. He's a cocky comedian. Literally.
Can't argue with that.
That's most of what I have, except for I have the closing scene where they're making out. Why are Bill Pullman's eyes open? Did you clock
at
that?
The very end, they kiss after they've like just been surprise married, and yeah, he is like staring daggers into.
It's really creepy.
The other actress
took me out of the
I
whole movie.
Not see that, and I'll take your word for it.
It was like I feel like there must have been something there, but it could also just be he was early in his roles and he felt uncomfortable. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that it is a comfortable thing to do, and so he hadn't quite mastered that part yet, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, nothing else, Danielle?
No, I really appreciate Ed's take of, like, good bits, bad movie.
Well, Ed, other than good bits, bad movie, anything else you wanted to add or anything we haven't covered?
Yeah, I mean, it's, like, last time you asked me, like, you know, do you renew your vows and that kind of stuff, and I was, like,
hold on. I will get to
I'll
that.
I'll hold on to that.
Okay.
No, I don't think I have anything else then. I just think that, It's not in my top five. It might not be in my top eight. It might not be in my top 10 Mel Brooks movies. It's not my favorite Mel Brooks movie.
Dang,
I don't know.
Not even in the top 10.
How many Mel Brooks movies are there?
11.
Oh. So this is number 11. I knew it was close to 10,
but I didn't realize.
I think it's 11. And so, no, I mean, this, it's a stretch. I don't know. It's not my favorite.
Okay. Okay. Well, with that, then we might as well roll right into, give your 0 to 5 heart rating and then your would you renew your vows. For movie lovers, if you're new to this, 0 to 5 is supposed to be some semi-objective measure of how quality the movie is, and then renew your vows is the much more subjective of like, would you care to revisit this unless someone forced you to do it for a podcast in the future?
Right, so I think I would probably give it in the like 2.75 range hearts, and like renewing my vows, like I hope we can just still be friends. Like I don't want to renew vows, but I hope that we're like on good terms. Like if we see each other at a party, like I'll enjoy their presence.
That's fair.
All right, how about you, Danny?
I would give it 3 out of 5, which is shocking.
3 out of 5? I think that's higher than what you gave Young Frankenstein.
Oh,
almost.
Sorry.
Uh-oh. We might have to go back and check that now.
But for the humor, I liked 75% of the jokes, I would say. So that's the 3 out of 5.
That's pretty good ratio. Yeah. That's pretty good ratio.
Yeah. Did I like the movie? No. Will I watch it again? I'm sure it's going to be on our in our house on the TV again. So will I sit down and pay attention to it again? Nah.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, you all have talked me down from where I was.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. I think I'm going to give it, and I'm still going to give it the highest. I think I'm going to give it a 3.5, okay?
That's what I thought you were going to do. Yeah, that sounds about right.
If I'm being honest and I'm trying to be objective, like, I do like it a lot more than the two of you do. I do think that there's a lot there for it. I think that if you are as steeped in Star Wars as I am, but are someone who can appreciate making fun of it, like there's more there even to be mined too, because they're just little nods and like knowing what people talk about as being the amazing things about the filming of Star Wars and the technical achievement of Star Wars. There's things that are knocked at it in this. So 3.5, I will like renew my vows, but you know, I'll admit it's not a strong one. So it's a, you know, because of everything we talked about, I am sure I will want our soon-to-be son to, you know, watch this movie someday.
Oh, yeah,
I
look let's not forward get crazy. I'm still going to show this to my boys.
So, like, for that, yes, I'm sure it will get watched. Having said that, it has been years since I'd last seen this movie, and it will be years, probably, because I don't know that I will have the itch to see it again until I think our son is old enough, which is not going to be for a little minute.
Yeah, it's got enough jokes in there that it's going to be a bit for my boy still, too.
Yeah.
We were messaging at one point when he was watching it, and was like, oh, I forgot how many curse words are in this, like because they drop a-hole like 1,000 times in the first scene.
Yeah, I don't need my boys just walking around when I ask them to find their toys, and they're like, we ain't found shit.
How many assholes are in this room? That's funny.
All right. Well, that was a good time. We really appreciate it. But
thanks for having me back. It is always a good time seeing you guys.
You too. You too. You are among our favorite guests. Not that we have any that we don't enjoy, to be honest. But I always enjoy talking about it with you.
I said this morning, I was like, I'm excited for Ed to be back on. I had a good time last time. So
thanks.
We will have to do Robin Hood because I remember enjoying that one.
Okay. All right, well, Ed said he's on board, so we'll find a time for that, and we'll figure out a way to make it make sense, and we'll get to, we've visited Ed's sort of favorite, we'll visit mine that's special for me, and we'll get to visit yours that's special for you.
Oh, that's nice.
Is it special for me? No, I laughed. That's all I remember.
All right.
Anyways.
Well, we need to get to bed. Ed needs to get to bed, so we're gonna let each other go, and we'll say goodbye. So, I love you, Danny.
I love you, Nick.
We love you, Ed. Thank you so much for being with us, and we love you, movie lovers.
Bye bye.
Bye.
In love with movies. Da da da. Earlier in the living room, I rolled off my giant yoga ball and then started crying. I just keep falling right now.
I'm excited.
It's an adventure, and it's here's another. All the cliches are true. The good ones are better than you can imagine. And the hard ones are a little worse.